I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, I hope this isn't going to be some Christmas thing. Or else you're thinking, if I'm going to listen to the same old podcast I listen to every other day of the year, it better be Christmassy. This used to depress me as a teenager. I used to know what's this. The beginnings of cable and satellite television. You'd get the RTE guide, the Christmas edition of that is very popular. And you look at the Christmas Day listings for Sky One. It's exactly the same schedule as every other normal weekday for 365 days a year. You'd see 4 p.m. different strokes. Then they'd show Bewitched. And then they'd show Star Trek The Next Generation in black and white, same as every other day. Now I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, wait a minute, Star Trek The Next Generation in black and white. Yes, on an old hand-me-down 14-inch portable television that had a huge hole in one bottom corner of it. Because in those days, when there was a hole in the corner of a television, we had those catering tubs of margarine. Now, you may not be familiar with them. If you're not from a family that ate margarine instead of butter, you used to be able to get these 4-pound tubs. It was a big, square, hard plastic tub with a lid on it. You could use them for anything. So you'd get one of these, you'd get two in about a month, and then you'd have the tub, and you'd use that for anything. You'd use it for storing Lego, or you'd use it to make concrete blocks to put in your garden path, or you'd use it to store sand. Or in my case, you'd cut a bottom corner off the plastic tub, and you'd have a plastic corner to replace the hole in your old plastic black and white portable television. And you tape that on, you use a bit of black plastic tape and tape that to it. It's probably highly dangerous. It's probably lucky I didn't burn the whole house down. Well, I got lucky. I didn't burn any of the house down at all, and it served me well for many years. Used to watch Star Trek The Next Generation in black and white. And eventually I watched it in colour, and it was a revelation as I realised space is black and white. These people were flying around in space in the future, in the black depths of despair known as space. They'd fly around in that looking for any sign of life. They go through millions and millions and millions and miles and miles and miles of emptiness. Eventually they get to some sun and they say, there's a sun. Where there's sun, there's planets. That's a good sign, they'd say. That's the sun. And then someone else would go, no, it's just a bog standard star. That's not a sun at all. And then someone else would go, you fucking idiot. You fucking, it's usually Captain Picard would say this. He'd say, you fucking idiot. You fucking idiot. A star is a sun. Every star you see in the night sky is a sun. Even if you see it at night, it's a sun. I know you think we don't see suns at night time. We only see them in the day. But no, every star you see in the night sky is a sun. It's a star to us because it's someone else's sun. It's like when you see a moon that belongs to another planet. That's not our moon, so we don't call it them moon, but it's still our moon. The same is true of other people's suns. Other people's suns are stars, but to them they're a sun. So, and the same is true of people. You see someone else and you say, oh, his kid is a gobshite. I don't like his kid. That's okay. He probably likes his kid. So he thinks of his kid as, wait, I suppose that probably doesn't. Anyway, yes, I did watch Star Trek The Next Generation in black and white. And I did enjoy it, but when I saw in the Christmas Day schedules, and then they'd show some police drama. And it wasn't proper police dramas, there was American police dramas. Everything's a murder over there. You're not allowed to just catch a pickpocket. It has to be murder. It's the most depressing concept ever. You watch some cop drama for 12 years, and at the end of the last season, they catch some fella and put him in jail, and then there's the closing titles, and then you realise that world is just going to go on forever. They won't be filming it, but the next week they'll have another murder and that bald fella will have to figure it out. And you want to watch that on Christmas Day? No. Just no. Anyway, happy Christmas to one and all. This might go out before Christmas or after Christmas or during Christmas. Well, you'll probably think it's during Christmas, because this goes out on the 30th of December, you'll probably go, oh, look, he's putting a podcast out on Christmas. No, it's not Christmas. Christmas ends at 11:59 p.m. on the 25th of December. The day after that is called St. Stephen's Day or Boxing Day, depending on your location. If you're in America, it's nothing, because you did your thing on Thanksgiving. You did your thing, you had your turkey and your shit. Whatever it is you do, you go around being thankful. From what I understand, you get a turkey and you stab it in the chest and you rip it open and you tear out its entrails. Now you're doing that in the interest of safety, because it's dangerous to eat a turkey's entrails. So you take them out. You're not being violent or anything. You're doing quite the opposite. When you rip out the entrails of a turkey, that is a non-violent act. You are saving the lives of the people who are going to eat it. You don't want to eat raw entrails. No. You put them in a sausage, I presume, or something. I don't know. I've never ripped out a turkey's entrails. I've found them, and then I've had occasions when I've not found them. But luckily, they're in a bag. So when you do eventually find them, well, you just take it out and put it in the bin. You say, that's that, I'm taking that, it's in a bin. There's a bag inside this that the surgeon left inside the turkey. You take that out and you put it in the bin, and that's that. There's a smell in here. There's a smell in this room where I am. Now, that won't affect you, of course. You don't need to worry about that. You don't need to worry about that. I do. Not because the smell is going to do any harm. There's just me in here. I'm not going to harm anyone with this smell. What I need to worry about is whether I can make it into a primer for a segment of this program. So there's a smell in here. There is. Not like the wasp that was in here a couple of weeks ago. That was fictional, for one thing. Several months ago, there was a real wasp in the room, and we covered that as well. But no, this is neither a real wasp nor a fictional wasp. This is a smell. Now, it's not the smell of a wasp, although I don't think I'd recognise the smell of a wasp. We all think we know wasps. We think we can identify a wasp. You think if there was a wasp in here in this room now, we'd know straight away. And we might know from the sounds it makes, or from the fact that it's flying around in front of your face, terrifying you. Would you be able to identify a wasp by smell? I very much doubt it. You might fool yourself into thinking you can. You'd see this yellow thing flying around in front of you and you say, oh, that smells like a wasp. But you know damn well, you're just guessing. You see something flying around and it's yellow and you think, oh, if I could smell that and identify the smell, it would probably smell like a wasp. Even though you've never smelled a wasp in your life. There's probably animals who can smell wasps. Our cats go around smelling insects all day, every day. They sniff spiders and then eat them. They sniff flying things and eat them. Maybe they're just sniffing to see if they smell of mold. Maybe they can't identify various different insects. We'll never know. You just sniff it to see if it might be gone out of date or something. I suppose that's the most important thing about smelling these things. Anyway, as I say, there is a smell in here. Although now that I think about it, it's gone now. I suppose it had been 3 minutes since I brought it up, so it has dispersed now. So didn't need to bring it up in the first place, but at least we got 3 minutes over, and that's good, because I've been having trouble getting going today. So it's good. It's good. A little bit of smell has helped as a primer, and that's absolutely fantastic. I've been in here an hour and a half recording shit. It's all been absolute tripe. And then I decided, wait a minute, I'll just go, there's a smell in here. Because I had just farted, but I hadn't really noticed the smell, to be honest. I was lying about that. I just imagined that there was a smell. And there probably was, but I wasn't taking much notice of it. But it's definitely dispersed by now. I know that. I don't need to be able to smell it to know that it's dispersed. In fact, if I can't smell it, I would imply that it's dispersed. But that's not what I'm getting at, no. I don't think I even smelled it at all in the first place. I just felt the sensation. I was doing an act that would create a smell. But I wasn't really aware of the smells at all. We don't all spend our days going around checking out smells. That's why smells have to be so extreme sometimes, because the smells know that you're not going to notice them unless you're looking out for them, so they have to do something extreme. You come across a very strong fart and you smell it straight away, even though you're not on the lookout for smells. They're doing you a favour. They're doing something to draw your attention. Otherwise, it's like having someone puts on their brake lights on the car in front of you, but their bulb is too faint, so you end up crashing into them. No, you don't want that. And the same is true of that. You join me at a tremendously exciting moment, unless, of course, you happen to be in one of the parts of the world where they don't celebrate December. In which case, it's just a normal, bog-standard, run-of-the-mill month. Maybe you're in the Southern Hemisphere, in which case it's the height of summer, and you're off on your holidays any minute now. You're going to go down the beach somewhere, or else you're going to get on the plane and go to wherever the Southern Hemispherial equivalent is of some island off Spain. You're going to go there, you're going to put on your shorts and go down to the beach, and then have someone sell you an overpriced bottle of beer. You'll probably drink that. And then you say, this is great. I love the summer holidays in the middle of December. It's perfectly normal. I'm sitting on the beach getting burnt to a crisp by the sun in the middle of what normal people on the rest of the planet think of as the middle of winter. Santa Claus wears shorts down there, probably, does he? Or do you expect him to wear the whole full rig out? Well, you probably do. You probably think, fuck you, Santa Claus. You'll give us the same service and performance and show that you give to the kids in the rest of the world, even though it's 5,900 degrees here and the sun is splitting the rocks. You have them going down your chimney in a winter coat and a beard in the middle of, I suppose, you probably have ways around that, I don't know. Your chimney won't be too hot, of course, because you don't light a fire in the middle of December because you think that's summer. You think, no. In the middle of December because you think that's summer. You think, no. By the way, how is he getting there? If you're away on your summer holidays on some beach somewhere, how and why is he even going to your house? Maybe he's a burglar. Has that occurred to you? This fella's going to your house while you're away on your summer holidays and it's not even winter. In a red hat and a coat with a bubbly thing on the top of it. He's got some sort of animal towing him. He's presumably being banned from driving. Oh, that's not fair. That's not fair, actually, no. Santa Claus is not being banned from driving. He's being banned from piloting a plane. The standard for piloting a plane is, of course, a lot higher than that for driving a car. He hasn't done anything to be banned from driving. He's just not qualified to fly a plane. That's why he has to have a flying sleigh of some sort and all that shit. Because most normal bog standard people are not capable of flying an aircraft. He's just one of the 99.999% who have never learned to pilot a plane or an aircraft of any kind. And he's not going to go out and do this on a flying sleigh with some sort of magical reindeer in the middle of winter or in the middle of summer where you are. Of course, you're in Australia, so the airways there are at their busiest at that time of year because everyone's going on holiday. You can't have a stay flying around there, so no, that's reasonable. None of this is a failing on Santa Claus's part. If you're listening to this on a commercial aircraft, first of all, don't let this distract from your piloting, please. Only do this if your duties allow. Maybe you're halfway across the Atlantic and you're all on autopilot and you've both had your dinner and it's digesting. It's not long enough of a flight for shift, so there isn't another couple of pilots sleeping in a bunk bed somewhere, which apparently is a thing on longer long-haul flights. An hour or two after takeoff, the pilot and the co-pilot go to bed and the spare pilot and the co-pilot take over and then they come back and land the plane. And say, oh, we're all rested now, we can land the plane. We're so refreshed that we can pretend we haven't been flying at all. Which is going to cause confusion because they think, oh, I don't remember flying all this way. Are you sure we're near our destination at all? Because last I checked, we had just taken off when we were about an hour into the flight. And I don't remember anything after that. And of course, the alternate crew will explain to them, no, you went to bed after an hour. We took over and you went to bed. And now you're all refreshed. It's okay that you can't remember the rest of the flight because you weren't involved in it. You were asleep. Well, I presume you were asleep. You went to bed, whatever little bunk bed arrangements you have in some sort of a cupboard back there. I presume you went to bed. You disappeared anyway and we took over as scheduled and now you're back and refreshed to take over for the last hour of the flight and to land us safely at our destination. Please rest assured we are within an hour of your destination. We got you there. We got you there. We did the easy bit. We took over at cruising altitude and we drove the plane in a straight line until now and then your alarm clock went off, presumably. I've been watching a lot of air crash investigation and on the longer flights, sometimes they have, well, as I believe I've just effectively explained, although I might have done it arseways, because I don't think it's that they go to bed an hour into the flight and then the spare crew take over and then they, the other lot, come back. No, I think what happens on most of the ones I've seen, yes, I am describing it incorrectly. On most of the ones I've seen, the pilot and the co-pilot take off and then they fly and 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 then they get to near the end of the flight. Then the spare pilot and co-pilot get up. They've been in bed the whole flight. Either way, they work it out so you don't have a pilot and a co-pilot who've been up all night going mad on the... Now that I think about it though... You might be better off having a pilot and a co-pilot who've been flying all night, because at least you know what they've been doing. They've probably had a couple of coffees, they've been cruising, and you know exactly where they've been all night. The other two, they've been in their berth. They have some sort of a berth or a bunk bed or something where the other two go to sleep. For all we know, they could be playing poker and drinking whiskey all night in that berth, or doing drugs, or just lying awake in bed, not breaking any of the rules. It's not illegal to not go asleep. I presume it's not. I don't know how a company could have a rule whereby you go off, you go into that berth there, and you are under orders to go asleep. The only way that would work is if they give them sleeping drugs. They wouldn't do that because they want them to fly a plane later. So no, you can't order your employees to go asleep. Even if they are in the berth and there's no alcohol or drugs available to them and there's no distractions, there's no way to prevent them just lying awake all night, getting no sleep and just working themselves up into a frenzy of worry. They get into that cycle where you have anxiety about the fact that you're not sleeping and that makes you even more insomniacal. Is that a word? Insomniacal. Maniacal. Is maniacal from the word insomniac or vice versa? Probably is, because then you have insomniacal. You see, this is what happens. You think about something too much and you can't even figure out insomniac. So insomniacal. So insomniacal is insomniac and somiacal, maniacal. I'm trying to figure out whether the word maniacal can be attached to the in some part. So it's in some maniacal. I can't seem to think it through in my head. I'd have to write it down and look at it to figure that out. There's the word maniacal, and then there's the word insomniac. And I'm trying to figure out if you've had insomniac, miac, no, it's not, because that would be insomniacal or something, wouldn't it? No, maniacal isn't part of insomniac. It's not. So it's not a mania. Or maybe it is, but the words don't match up. So you can't have an insomniacal. No, that's not a thing. Anyway, these drivers, they send two of them off to bed so they're refreshed and they're supposed to come down from bed to the cockpit about an hour before they land and they're ready to do a proper refreshed landing. They say, hello, how's it going? We're ready to go now. Just make sure there's enough fuel. Have you left us enough fuel? Or have you gone mad and burnt the midnight oil all night? That's another thing. Those pilots could have stayed up reading in bed, using the light from their phone, and no one would know. There's no guarantee that they've had a nice, proper, refreshing sleep. They could be less refreshed than the pilots who've been up all night. I'm not suggesting that you punish these people for not going asleep. If they fail to go asleep, that's not their fault. Who among us can fall asleep in the air? It's hard enough as a passenger to fall asleep in midair. Imagine if you're the pilot. No. In fact, if I was the pilot there, I'd be thinking, oh, I've got 4 hours off now. I'm not going to spend them sleeping. This is my half night off. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to probably watch videos in bed or listen to podcasts. Maybe make a podcast. Maybe make a podcast in bed, in the berth, on the plane. Why not? It's your spare time. You're entitled to do with it as you please. Although maybe it's not. But is that considered part of the shift, the sleeping power? Maybe it is, but still. But what I think should happen is, when the two spare pilots get up and they come down to the cockpit and they say, oh, hello, how was your night? And the pilots who've been flying all night saying, oh, it was great, it was uneventful, being here on autopilot, having a nice chat. Now, you have four pilots there and two of them are going to land the plane. You should have some sort of a test. Which two of the four pilots are most alert and in a better position to fly the plane for the last stretch? Don't just assume that the two who have been to bed are more refreshed. I don't mean it to be punitive. No. If you have four engines, you wouldn't just go, oh, well, those two haven't been in use for the last 4 hours, so they're presumably in the best condition to use. No, you'd run a test and check. Same with anything else. Same with anything else. You go, hello, we're up. You've been up all night. It's not a thing of going, who's done the most work? You should go to bed now or whatever. No. Who's in the better place to fly the plane? Have them all do a crossword or something when they get up. 2 hours before the plane lands, have the four pilots do a crossword. Now, of course, they can't all do it at the same time because two of them need to be concentrating on flying the plane. I suppose that'd be a good test as well. Concentrate on how well you can do a crossword while flying the plane. So I suppose the four of them would have to be flying the plane while they're doing the test. So maybe you have 20 minutes where the four of them are all in charge of flying the plane and see who gets the crossword done quickly. But there's more to it than that. It has to be done correctly as well. And they're not allowed to confer. Not like a pub quiz. They can't all be on the same team, all around the one table. There's no table in the cockpit. Or is there? Wait. When they bring in their dinner, surely they put that on the table. I don't know. I would think, having watched 15 seasons of Air Crash Investigation, I would have some knowledge of whether or not there were tables in the cockpit the pilots drink and eat on. I would think so. I've seen enough episodes where the stewardess comes up and says, hello, would you like a coffee or would you like your dinner now or whatever. I've checked my memory banks now and I don't seem to know whether or not they served them on a table in the cockpit. I don't know. That's a bit weird now that I think about it. And not only have I watched every season of Air Crash Investigation, I've also recently been watching some YouTube things. There's some amateur people who do stuff about air crash investigations and they use footage from Microsoft, the air traffic simulator or whatever. And they all talk about the, I suppose maybe they don't talk about that there. I don't know what they do. They use simulator footage anyway on the YouTube versions of these shows. In fact, most of the time they show shots of an empty cockpit and an empty cabin and they just say, then the pilot pressed that button and the other pilot pressed that button. And meanwhile, in the back, the passengers were all getting anxious. But then they show an empty simulated cabin. This Irish fellow, who I think he's a trainee pilot, and he makes these programs and all the footage is stuff he gets from flight simulator programs. So he shows shots of the inside of an empty cabin, shots of a plane flying through the synthesized air. He shows the plane took off and the pilots were all arguing and here's what they were saying, but then it shows an empty cabin. So you don't have to think about the human beings on it at all. It's much more enjoyable than the TV show Aircraft Investigation. Because on Aircraft Investigation, they show actual people who are in this plane crash. They show them talking and saying that all the horrors they went through. I want to just enjoy this plane crash as entertainment. I don't want to hear about people who actually suffered, because that takes away from my enjoyment. Green Dot Aviation. is the name of the channel alluded to in the previous segment. The YouTube channel is called Green Dot Aviation. It's very good. While you're on there, follow Into Your Head Short. That's almost as good, or I'd argue it's equally good, but it's hard to compare the two because it's like comparing oranges and apples with something else. People like to say it's like comparing oranges and apples. They say that as if apples and oranges are two very, very different things. They're not. But I would argue that comparing my channel Into Your Head Shorts with Green Dot Aviation is like comparing apples and oranges with dogs and cats. I know, it's like you're tag teaming comparisons now in a way. It's like in wrestling, you have tag teams of these people. So you don't say it's like comparing earthquake and tornado, because they're on the same tag. I don't know if you realize this. There was a well-known WWF wrestler in the 1990s called Earthquake. And he eventually teamed up with this other fella called, it was either Tornado or Typhoon, and they called themselves the Natural Disasters. Now, if I was going to go, it's like comparing Earthquake with Typhoon. To me, anyway, that would be like saying comparing apples and oranges. They're very similar things. They're not very different at all. In fact, they're on the same team. So why wouldn't I? I wouldn't say comparing my YouTube channel Into Your Head Shorts. See intoyourhead.ie/shorts. Comparing that with Green Dot Aviation, the very excellent YouTube channel run by this Irish fella about air crash investigations. Comparing those two is not like comparing apples and oranges. It's like comparing apples and oranges with something that's very much not apples and oranges. And I know apples are not oranges and oranges are not apples, but they're not terribly different. They're both fruit, they're both edible by humans, they're both round. One has a skin that's very different from the other skin. You'd eat the skin of an apple, but you wouldn't eat the skin of an orange. I suppose there's that. And you can open up an orange without using a knife. Weirdly, this thing that's supposedly natural, this orange, we're told these oranges are natural, that they're made by Mother Nature. Once you get the peel off, you find it inside. It's very, very unnatural. It's divided into segments in the same way that you might expect in a factory-made confectionery item. It divides equally into segments that are very conveniently just tear apart. You can take out a segment of an orange and it just comes out like it's from a pack of sweets. When you order garlic bread with your pizza, they send this weird square box with garlic bread in it. You can tear off a square. And the inside of an orange is like that. You can tear off a segment that's very equal and suspiciously easy. Once upon a time, there was a dog. And this dog, he was walking along one day, along the middle of a field, not doing anything particular other than just walking around on some field, on Earth somewhere. Doesn't really matter where. And when I say on Earth, I mean he was walking on Earth, as in the substance Earth, the stuff the ground is made of. We call that Earth. I didn't mean to give an address as to what planet he was walking on. I presume they have Earth on other planets. Maybe they call it something else, but they have Earth. You can be walking around on the Earth, or lying down on the Earth, enjoying the cold Earth beneath you. I'm sure you can do that. Surely you can do that without being on Earth. Let's hope so, because we're sending people to Mars. Elongated Musk is planning to send people to Mars. And surely when they arrive on Mars, they're going to want to have some contact with the Earth beneath their feet. They're not going to say, the Mars beneath my feet. No, there's no need to change languages just because you go to it. In fact, if you're going to another place, ideally the best thing to do is to have no change of language. You want continuity of language. You don't go and create a new language just because you take over some empty planet. No, we're colonizing it. Bring our own language over, surely. That's what they'll do. So no, they'll say, the Earth beneath me. I'm here on Mars and I'm outside somehow. Maybe they've invented a way to put an atmosphere there, I don't know. But presumably at some point that's the plan. They're going to figure out how to put breathable atmosphere. And then you'll be able to walk around and enjoy the bare earth of Mars. That'll be great. That'll be great for you. You'll have a great time doing that if you're one of the colonists. You probably have been thinking about this all your life. You've got on a plane sometime when you're in your 20s and gone, oh, I'm going to go over here to Elon Musk's house and say, please bring me to Mars. And then Elon Musk is going to put you on a plane. And then the plane will go higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And when it gets past a certain height, it'll officially not be a plane anymore. It'll be a spacecraft. And then it'll just go into space. And the pilots will go, oh, now, which way is Mars? Make sure we're headed the right way for Mars. You don't want to be going the wrong way. We're going to look silly if we do that. And of course, the co-pilot then will say, which way is Mars? Because I'm only used to thinking about it from the ground. The moon is up there. The plough formation is over there. So Mars is usually about 2 inches to the left of that. I presume they know what they're doing, just like any other form of transport. So anyway, that's Mars for you. There's probably planets made of liquid. It would be unreasonable to say I'm going to enjoy wandering around, walking with my feet, touching the earth here on this liquid planet. But why would you go there? Well, maybe you want a guarantee of liquid. A guarantee of liquid available 24/7. But then if you found a planet that was all water, the whole planet was water, they'd say, that's a bit much. That's a bit much. You want to have some land as well. That's not adventuring at all. You're just making a clone of this planet.
Into your head.
I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, I thought he said earlier on that he wanted pilots to try a little experiment for him. Did he not say something along the lines of, if you're in a cockpit flying an airplane at the moment, I'd like you to consider doing the following experiment. Well, that's true, I did. That's true. I got distracted. I got involved in something I wouldn't call a complete distraction. I stayed on the subject of aviation for quite some time, I think you'll find. I did abandon the idea of an experiment, though. That's okay. We'll do it another time. Everything doesn't have to be done now. It's perfectly fine. We're not on a schedule here. No, no. We're having an unbridled monologue. And if I get distracted wondering how you'd go about the sleeping in the air process, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So don't worry. It'll be fine. The experiment can wait. I don't even know what the experiment was going to be. I hadn't thought of it yet. That's not how this program works. We don't think of stuff and then say it. No. We say stuff and see if it leads somewhere. Somewhere that's not too distant from the general topic of commercial aviation, I think you'll find. So it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Now, we did an experiment last week anyway. We did that thing about the traffic lights, if you remember. I started the program with an experiment for anyone sitting at the traffic lights. I even turned it into a YouTube thing as well. So there's that. So we don't have to have an experiment every week. This isn't a science lab. Two cats walk into a commercial aviation cockpit. One of the cats goes straight up to the aviation cockpit driving seat and says, hello, can I sit there, please? And the man in the seat says, no, I don't think so. You're a cat. You're a cat. You can't sit here. What would a cat be doing sitting here in a commercial aviation cockpit? And the cat says, well, for one thing, you're my owner. I'm in your sitting room. You, for some reason, collect aviation cockpit seats and put them in your sitting room. So I thought maybe you'd be open to letting your cat enjoy sleeping on one. Apparently, that's unreasonable now. That's unreasonable. Fair enough, fair enough. And the pilot says, wait a minute, why did this story start with two cats walk into a commercial aviation cockpit? And the cat says, because that's what we thought we had walked into. We came in, we smelled it, and we looked at it, and we listened to it, and it sounded and looked and smelled like an aviation cockpit. So we said, two cats walked into an aviation cockpit. And the pilot says, how would you know what an aviation cockpit smells like? And the cat says, because I belong to someone who's obsessed with them. That's why. And the pilot says, fair enough. Fair enough. Would you like to sit in the co-pilot seat then? And the cat says, no, the other cat can sit there. The other cat, who never really has anything to say in these stories, he can sit there. And the pilot says, fair enough. Well, you sit here then, and I'll go and have a sleep in the bunk bed or something. You take over here. It's an awful pilot anyway. What can go wrong? What can go wrong? Well, we'll find out now, I suppose. And the cat says, oh no, I'm not falling for that shit. I'm not falling for that shit. If you're going off to sleep in some bed there, that means the bed you have is more comfortable than this seat. Show me where the bed is. And the pilot says, fuck you, cat. Get off my aeroplane. You've no business being on an aeroplane. If you are, you'd be in a cage underneath with the baggage. Your baggage in more ways than one. Your baggage on this aircraft, your baggage in the sense of you being part of a traditional two cats walk into a bar story that's done out of a force of habit on this podcast. You've managed to get in the way here. So your baggage, dead weight and baggage, that's what you are. And the cat says, well, this baggage is what pays for your pilot wages. It's a budget airline. Go and check in. And they say, your ticket will be 2 cents and your excess baggage will be 85 euros per stone. And of course, you get round that by saying, oh, there's no stones in this baggage. But they'll say, no, we're talking about stones in terms of imperial weight measurements. Which, of course, they convert to metric now. They'll say, oh, it's 85 euros per 0.742165 kilograms of dead weight. Of course, the problem is, how do they define dead weight? And they don't. There's nothing to define. It's just dead. The fact that it can't be defined, I suppose. The fact that it can't be identified as anything. There was this picture going around on Twitter a few years ago. There's a picture of someone's room. You can see that there are several items in the photo, but it was blurred to the extent that he couldn't identify a single object in the whole photo. And it's a bit like that. When you have dead weight, it's something you can't identify anything in it. So you just say, I don't know what's in this box. I'm just going to call it dead weight. That's going to be a problem, of course, with customs and excise. Because when you go through customs, they want to know, what exactly are you transporting here? You can't just say, oh, it's a box of dead weight. No, they want to know what's in it. Is it drugs? Is it gold? Is it cash? Is it flour? Is it souvenirs of somewhere where you've been? Is it souvenirs of somewhere where you're pretending to have been? Not that it's their business. Maybe you've gone on a one-day round trip and you're telling everyone that you've been on holiday and you bring back gifts that you just brought at the airport before you departed. You're going to go home the same day. Spend 2 weeks sitting in your house, pretending you're still away, and just have a holiday from the world. Then tell everyone, oh, I'm back now. Here's your gifts that I brought. I bought you some souvenirs. Maybe that's what you've got. Anyway, that's how that works.